And good evening, Hoops HD fans. Welcome to May Madness, the newest event in college basketball, where we're, every single team is still alive, and there's no games out tonight. What's going on?
I don't know, but this is really starting to get to me. Every night I turn on the TV and there's no games. What's going on?
Anyhow, let's get started here. My name is Chad Sherwood. I'm your host here at Hoops HD. With us, we do have an all-star panel for an off-season edition here, coming to you here early May, beginning with the puppet there that is going crazy already, David Griggs. David, can I ask how you are? How's your withdrawal going?
It's not good. And again, I've been in, well, some of those things weren't even felonies, Chad. Why am I in so much trouble?
Well, that internet scam regarding the being able to get people out of work did kind of backfire.
It wasn't a scam. I got them out of work.
We've got trials coming up in a couple of weeks on one of them, but we're dealing with that. Also joining us, though, is Joby Fortson coming to us from Virginia country. Joby, how you doing?
I'm doing well, though. Justin Anderson better get drafted in the first round, damn it.
Yeah, there's going to be a few good things will be a little different in down in UVA next season. But
Wow.
I guess it's going to be a little early who's in, who's out, especially with recruiting still not wrapped up. So we'll probably get into that issue a little later on in the off season. Finally, also joining us is John, coming there with the NJIT swag. I'm very impressed.
Correct. Right here in the heart of All-Star Country, coming this July, albeit in another sport.
Yeah.
Is there another sport other than college basketball?
I don't think there is.
I didn't know what he was talking about.
I know.
Anyhow, our game plan for tonight is we're going to go over some news and notes that have been going on in college basketball recently, and then we're going to hit a bit on realignment, kind of a review of what's happened with realignment the last few years, and a bit of a look ahead to some potential realignment news going forward. But let's start with the news and notes. And David, I want to start with a little bit of news that I know is near and dear to your heart. As both the Horizon League and the Big Sky has announced this offseason, that beginning next year they will be going away from the campus sites format for the conference tournaments and be playing them on your preferred format of a neutral court in a city that is within the conference.
This is awful. I don't understand the thought process. If you've watched the Big Sky and the Horizon League, and again, I guess this is the off-season under the radar portion of the show, they have been fantastic the last couple of years. The Horizon League had four teams going into the last week of the season that were still alive for first place, which meant home court advantage and the double bye. So it added a lot of stakes to the regular season and a lot of excitement and a lot of meaning that otherwise would not have been there. And not to mention the tournament itself, it's great atmosphere all the way through. A conference that you didn't mention was the Atlantic Sun. People talked about, oh my God, what a great game at North Florida. The Northeast Conference, like St. Francis Brooklyn, and how they hosted it. The Big Sky and the Horizon League were two leagues that provided not just exciting tournaments, but excited seasons leading into the tournament, and it's all gone now. I just don't get the thought process. You talk to people from those leagues that make this decision, and they say they didn't like that it was so spread out. This is condensed and there's less travel. Well, if you're at campus sites, one of the teams isn't traveling at all. I don't understand that.
I just to correct something I said.
Idea.
On the Big Sky, they're actually playing that in Reno, Nevada, which is, I guess, is really a true neutral site for the Big Sky, more or less, although it's a pretty spread-out conference geographically. The Horizon League is going to be in Detroit for the first few years at the Joe Louis Arena, and then at the new Detroit Event Center that's going to be opening up in a couple of years.
Well, do you agree with me, whether it's a neutral site or not, this damages the importance of the regular season, because unless somebody gets out there and destroys it in November and December, you're not playing for anything anymore.
I would disagree that it would damage the regular season, because look at the MAC as one example. They still have the ladder format where they have the double or the triple bye, so there's still some incentive to get, let's say, a top one or a top two seed, but you still have a nice neutral site up in Cleveland, which is easily accessible to all of their fans.
Right. Well, the MAC uses the ladder. If I'm not mistaken, these conferences are not using a ladder.
I know the Big Sky will not be using a ladder. They're going to go to the standard format with all 12 teams invited for the first time in Big Sky history. The Horizon League has not announced what their new format's going to be. They specifically in their press release said the only thing that's going to stay the same is the night for the championship game, but they haven't decided yet if they're going to use a ladder format or not.
So assuming Detroit is not in the championship game, we're going to have a school night championship game in a city that's no... that's. I'm done. Where's my bourbon? Anyway.
You swallowed the bottle.
It's all about helping the economy of Detroit. It's all about it. It's going to be a big boon for that city.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be a boom, all right.
Yeah, all 30 people that show up to the Joe Louis Arena wearing their Valparaiso jerseys will all go out to dinner and maybe even get a hotel room afterwards. So.
Well, I don't know if it's a Detroit thing. I mean, they have the Big Ten hockey tournament that's played at Joe Louis and used to be the CCHA, but I don't know if they're going to be as good of a host for basketball. Why not play it at, let's say, the Palace of Auburn Hills until the new arena is ready?
Yeah. Or why not play it on campus? That seemed to be working great.
So we're down to, like I think you mentioned, the Atlantic Sun, the Northeast, and the America East, I believe, are the only three left that do campus sites, even if I'm not missing somebody. The Patriot League as well. So we've only got a few left, and but I agree with you, David. I think it's heading in the wrong direction, and it seems like we're heading towards everybody wanting to go to a neutral site for some reason.
Yeah.
I mean, I really have never run the numbers. Is it more money? I mean, you know, usually these are completely bottom line driven. Is it more money? And if it's not, I don't understand. I'm very much on your where you guys are. I, as a fan, wanted a campus sites anyway, but I could at least understand it if some of these smaller conferences where basketball is the, because there is no, you know, it's FCS football, for instance, the Big Sky, the big money makers, this basketball tournament.
I can't imagine that the money would be bigger for two reasons. First of all, attendance is undoubtedly going to be less unless a team from that city gets in. Like, unless Detroit plays their way to the final, I can't imagine the attendance being higher. And even if they do, the only sessions that fill up are the ones Detroit is playing in. Conference USA. Yeah. And the other money issue is that when you don't help out your most deserving team, you make it harder for them to get to the NCAA tournament, and the most deserving team is generally the team with the best chance to advance in the NCAA tournament. Right. So... if it is about money, it would make sense. I would hate it, but at least you could understand the thought process if it were about money. Half the teams don't have to travel when it's on campus sites. In this case, all of them do. That's more money. Attendance is worse. I don't understand how this would result in more money in any way.
The only way I could see that happening, David, honestly, is if they think as part of it being a neutral site, they can now get some type of TV deal to put more of their games onto TV versus just some type of internet stream, and that could result in some more money. Especially the Big Sky, the only thing they've ever had televised has been the championship game in recent years. Everything else, you get some rather lousy stream through the conference website. So yeah, could be part of the – that's the only place I could see money actually –
yeah, I think
conference.
Big Sky does have one game a week on the Altitude Network, I think. But that's their only, to your point, that's their only TV deal.
Right. Let's move on to a bit of coaching news that just came down today. After Billy Donovan decided finally to pack his bags for the NBA and not turn around and come back to college this time, Mike White from Louisiana Tech was just hired tonight as Florida's new head coach. a guy that has never put a team in the NCAA tournament before. I know people like him, and I like him as a head coach, but you know, just 2 years ago, Florida was a number one seed, a Final Four team, and has been in the last decade and a half a perennial national championship contender. Is this the right move for them?
Somebody else want to go? But well, I like Mike White. I will say this: I do think that he is connected to a lot of the recruiting scene, to people that Florida wants to be connected to. He did a really good job at Louisiana Tech. As far as his whole body of work goes, they were awful when he got there. His first year there, they were 500, and they went to the WAC championship game, which was at the time. The last 2 years, I think they were on the bubble 2 years ago. This year, despite being good, I was kind of disappointed in their season overall. I was really expecting them to be a tournament-caliber team, and they weren't. But he still made that program a lot better. He can get players. I am surprised that Florida went with him when other coaches, Archie Miller, comes to mind. I'm blanking here. Chris Mack from Xavier. I think someone like Ben Jacobson probably wasn't an option simply because he has made it known that he wants to stay at Northern Iowa. He's turned down other jobs before. And Greg Marshall, again, turned down Alabama, probably may not have gone to Florida either, especially with the big raise he just got. But that was along the lines of who I thought Florida was going to be going after. Mike White is good. I don't think he's in the same class as those four. And another guy that wasn't even mentioned, you're going to laugh when I say this, Chris Holtmann, I think, would have been a very good candidate for that job, and nobody even considered him.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Richard Pitino when you said...
No, oh, for crying out loud.
Richard Pitino was one of the initial candidates, which made less sense to me than Mike White would have. Yeah. I mean, a guy that has been coaching for 3 years now, moved from Florida International to Minnesota without making the tournament, didn't make the tournament at Minnesota, and now he was in the mix for the Florida job. I don't get it. I don't think the guy has proven one bit that he can coach yet, but...
I'll give Pitino a break for the mess he had to clean up at FIU, but that's another story for another day.
Oh boy!
But he was there for 1 year. He didn't have the time to clean up a mess. He did nothing.
Oh hey. Wow!
Well, I think the bottom line of what happened here, and I think let's use Marshall as the example, was that Donovan put Florida in a tough position by being so late in the process. Marshall had already taken his money and an extension from Wichita State. Would have been really easy had Donovan at least let it be known right after the season, hey, I'm looking. And to my good friend Jeremy Foley, then they could have worked it out probably, I think, with a Marshall. You know, Alabama, Florida, there's no contest between those two
on
who the stronger program is.
But Joby, I think Donovan did kind of make it known towards the end of the season that he was thinking NBA, and the Oklahoma City job that he took didn't open up until literally the last day of the NBA season because the Thunder were right in there for a NBA playoff spot until I think the very last week. So I think it was more of just the timing of the end of the NBA season being so far after the end of the college basketball season.
I definitely understand that to a degree because maybe that Oklahoma City job isn't open, but I cannot believe that, you know, with all the agents of agents for coaches, that a deal could not have been orchestrated and struck with a bigger name. And the bigger names were gone. I mean, someone like Marshall was gone by then. That's who, in all honesty, makes the most sense because Florida is an elite program. They have good AAU program down there. They have talent.
Yeah, fantastic.
And now they have national titles in the last decade. I mean, it's a great program
I still think even at this stage they could have gotten a bigger name than White, which is where I agree with 100%.
I do agree.
Okay, let me ask you this. Did Florida settle for Mike White? Now, I realize that to us it looks like they settled for him. Maybe they didn't. I'm almost under the impression they wanted Mike White all along, which is odd to me. The only explanation I have is what Joby said, how deeply rooted he is in the AAU circuit down there.
But when you're talking AAU circuit, that comes down to recruiting. Yes. And when you talk about recruiting, I'm sorry, if you are the program that Florida believes it's been in the last decade, all you need to do is call up and say, hey, I'm calling, we're interested to have you play basketball at Florida, and the kids should be lining up.
Yeah, Chad, just to be clear, I agree with you. I just wonder if Florida was thinking like that.
Well, and the thing is, they see Leonard Hamilton for all of his, disappointment. Leonard
Hamilton That's being nice. Yes, for all of those.
Leonard Hamilton did good recruiting class after good recruiting class at Florida State. He takes a lot of those kids year after year after year. And Florida, without Billy Donovan, goes, well, are we going to now completely lose those kids to Florida State? They're seeing someone in their backyard being successful, getting exactly the type of kids that I think Florida should be having almost a monopoly on. There's really no reason for Florida State to be having such a big portion, but they do.
Yeah, in Florida State, you nailed it. They crushed recruiting, and Florida is really rich in recruiting. I mean, it's fantastic high school basketball, and yet Florida State gets so many of those players, yet they don't really rise up. Florida, there was a lot of talk about, oh, it was all Billy. Florida could be and will continue to be one of the elite programs in the nation, I think, just because of that. I'm a little surprised at the pick. I think they could have gotten someone else. My suspicion is Mike White is who they wanted. And the timing had nothing to do with why they picked him.
Well, let's move on. Jeremy Foley, then. Completely Jeremy. And I'm not saying good or wrong, and time will tell if it was a great hire or a missed hire.
He would not have been my pick. John, he would not have been my pick, but I like him. But I'm not Jeremy Fogle. Anyway, sorry, Chad.
I was just going to say let's keep things moving here. There's one other news and note topic we wanted to get to before we discuss realignment, and that is we expect in the next few weeks here to become official that next season we will be looking at a 30-second shot clock instead of the 35-second. Those of us that did watch the NIT and the CBI and the CIT got a chance to see it in action a little bit at the end of the season last year. And I'll tell you, about 2 or 3 years ago, if you'd asked me about this, I would have been absolutely against it. I'm now 100% in favor of the shorter shot clock. Let me throw it over to you, John, first. What's your thoughts on the 5 seconds less?
Well, I don't have any initial thoughts on it other than there have been some experimental games in some of the preseason tournaments that also had the short clock, the 30-second versus the 35-second clock, but maybe as a casual fan, I didn't notice too much of a difference initially.
I think the possession per game difference is only 2 or 3. It's not nearly what I thought it would be. My only issue is that the shot clock is not the issue. The way the game is officiated is the issue. In the pre-shot clock era, there were more possessions per game and there were more scoring because you couldn't get away with the rugby scrum style of defense, which is now basically commonplace. That's the problem. They need to change how the game is officiated, just like the NBA did. And I think that, I mean, again, when you watch games from 20 years ago, 25 years ago, those players knew how to play defense. It wasn't about mauling someone. It was about positioning and timing the jumps and the blocks and all that. I mean, the game is so physical now that I think the skill is gone, and that's why we've seen such poor offense. I don't think the shot clock is really the problem. I have no problems with it at 30, but that isn't what needs to change in order for the game to improve.
I cannot say it better myself. That's exactly right. So what? We limit 5 seconds off the shot clock? Yeah, people say, oh, this will hurt, some of the slowdown teams. No, it won't. It'll actually help them. You're going to give them only 30 seconds less to play that stifling defense. I mean, there are going to be worse possessions, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And there'll be more of them slightly. I mean, I think the percentage is actually going to go down. Because of this. Because you know, you might have had a good shot with 2 seconds in the present system that you wouldn't. That, you know, in the new one, you'll get a shot clock violation or a jack-up. The one positive, I will say this, the one positive I see off this is maybe now teams won't literally just waltz it up the court. Like they, like, you know, one of the problems is I feel like you see point guards walk it up and cross the, you know, cross midcourt with like 7-8 seconds already gone, even when there's no press.
Yeah.
Maybe now because they have to actually get into the offense. But I've always, one thing I do not want to see in college basketball, and this is where the Billises of the world are way off in my mind. Oh, the NBA is such a wonderful game. In my opinion, no, it's not.
No.
I don't like isolation basketball. Unless LeBron or someone with high-level skill is that isolation player, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see Stevenson isolated. Who cares? And I understand one issue with the college game is we're getting this blocker screen too much. I'd rather see blocker screen than bad isolation basketball, but that's my personal preference.
Well, let me throw it out here. This is the whole reason why I'm now in favor of the 30-second shot clock, and it has nothing to do with possessions per game, because I agree with everything you all have said on those issues. It's the end-of-game scenario. I think with 30 seconds on the shot clock, you're going to see a team more likely to play defense in that last minute than foul as quickly because and I can't stand when the last minute of a game takes 25 minutes to play. And if we can get little bit less fouling, I'd be in favor of a 15-second shot clock if we could avoid in the last minute of a game.
What did Tim Kloos say? He wanted it at 10 seconds, and he was serious. The man is not one.
I can't argue too much with that point, Chad. But I think there's other ways to address it, and that will be a positive. That's true. I think there will be a tick up on that, but I think there are other ways to address it. One, get rid of one of the timeouts, first of all.
Get rid of about three of the timeouts.
Get rid of all of them. Like, we have the media timeouts. Jesus.
Or have it like you can only have one timeout in the final minute or something. You know, something like that. And then on top of that, call intentional fouls.
Yes.
If you're fouling away from the ball. You know, I get it if you're going for a steal and you bump the guy and you're over-aggressive with the steal shot. Okay, that's still 1-on-1/2 shots, you know, whatever the situation is. But if you are grabbing a bad free throw player away from the ball or, you know, just grabbing a guy, call the intentional foul.
Yeah, if you're fouling on purpose, then you're intending to foul. It's an intentional – like, I agree with Joby on that. We got to stop the foul parade.
Let me throw this out there. Something I've thought about before in the past, I never really threw out before, but what would you think if the team was given the option, if they're fouled in the last minute of the game, of either taking their 2 free throws or being allowed to take a sidelines inbounds pass instead?
Okay. That sounds like a great idea, but they actually experimented with that. I want to say it was the 98-99 season, and it was a disaster. Okay. Because what ended up happening was a team would take it out, and they would foul again, and then they would have to take it out again, and they would foul again. And again, it was ridiculous.
It was the Great Alaska Shootout in 98-99.
Yeah, what was it, Louisville and Xavier? I believe, and I'm not making this up, there were 15 fouls in like 5 seconds. Is that right, John? It was crazy. Because Xavier just kept opting to take the ball out of bounds rather than shoot free throws, and Louisville just kept clobbering them.
And it seemed to prolong the game even further.
Yeah.
All right, so bad idea. Okay.
Well, but
no problem. I concede.
Yeah.
One of the the main topic we want to hit on here for the remainder of the show is realignment. And as of right now, and this could still change in the next month or so, but we have something pretty amazing coming into next season. As of right now, there is zero realignment planned from last season's conference alignment to this season. Not a single team moving conferences. No teams scheduled to move up from D2 to D1. In fact, in terms of changes for next season, the only changes we have is that Omaha has completed its transition. They'll be a full D1 member. And Texas Pan American has renamed itself to the UTRGV Rio Grande Valley Vaqueros. Yes. Other than that, there are no changes scheduled. And I honestly don't remember the last time that ever happened. I mean, going back 30, 40 years.
Yeah, and again, there's normally changes, but they're minuscule. But the seismic shifts, I think this is what we're talking about at the power level and the mid-major level, and just how different the landscape looks than it did 4 or 5 years ago, and is it better, is it worse? I would argue that it's worse, but we're going to get into that here in a second. But yeah, nothing on coming down the pike next year. You mentioned there is the possibility that UAB might be forced out of Conference USA, but they would not be joining another conference most likely until the following year. So no real changes.
Well, so they would be joining the team of the people as an independent.
Yes. Yes.
So we could have two independents next year, and they may be the last two independents ever if NJIT finally gets that invite. But yeah, that's what we want to get to here, really, is this realignment issue and go through is, you know, now that we really have kind of hit the end of it, I mean, I'm sure we'll have another shift at some point in the future. It always seems to happen, but we've hit the end of this latest round of realignment, and is the game better or worse for it? And Joby, let me start with you, especially being an ACC guy. That an ACC is one of the conferences that's some major changes because of this.
Yeah, now
a 15-team pass.
And you'll see the next shift. You'll see the next shifts when the television contracts are up for football. Let's be honest. That's what'll drive the changes, just as it did last time. You know, the ACC is too big, obviously. It's become the Big East, what the Big East was. But it's not been awful. And maybe it's because the ACC did so well in the tournament. But Louisville, Virginia playing twice, that wasn't outrageous. You know, maybe Notre Dame's a little weird being in to a degree, but even they were, you know, and maybe it's because Bray has the Krzyzewski tie. It didn't seem like just beyond crazy. If anything, the Florida schools may seem a little out of touch in basketball, but in football they seem integrated. The SEC expansion, well, A&M, that's fine. You know, that Missouri and to a lesser extent. Utah and Colorado seem at home in the Pac-12. The fact that the Catholic schools are all together in the Big East, I'm not saying it is as bad as what we thought. There are some teams who were left stranded. Connecticut is obviously one, as Lee Delvecchio will say often. That whole American Conference is a mess, but, you know, geographically, et cetera. But for the most part, I think the fears, while it certainly didn't make basketball, you know, step up and tons better, the fears are a little bit didn't come to fruition.
John, Joby mentioned the changes in the Big East. I know you being a Big East guy over there out in out west in Big East country. what are your thoughts on the new Big East? Because that is the American would be the new conference, but it's one of the results of this was this completely different Big East that in a way touches into the old Big East, but really doesn't because it's, you know, involves schools like Xavier and Marquette as well.
Well, it's also, in some ways, a chance to turn back the clock with true round-robin play and conference play because everyone still gets to play the full 18-game conference schedule. You still have everybody in the conference tournament at Madison Square Garden. But true rivalries, they're going to take some time to ferment. I mean, Xavier and Butler, people know about, but it's going to take a few years before we really start to see the new Big East take shape.
Yeah, and I guess maybe let me address the Big Ten. That's another conference that, I mean, we saw Maryland and Rutgers join. I mean, before them, Nebraska. I mean, you look what Maryland did this year. I mean, they had a very good year in basketball-wise in the Big Ten. They were one of the top teams in the conference most of the season. And, yeah, Rutgers clearly, even though I'm the Rutgers guy here, I'll admit with that it was completely a TV motivated. Let's get the Big Ten network into the New York City market deal. But I still thought that the Big Ten felt like the Big Ten this year. I don't think it grew to the point where it didn't feel like the conference anymore. And really, with the ACC, even with a school like Louisville in there, I still got the ACC feeling this year a lot more than I thought I would when this whole mess began a few years ago.
Even with Notre Dame winning the conference tournament, I mean, it still felt fine. And likewise, as you point out, Maryland's going to be a preseason favorite next year, along with Michigan State in the Big Ten, you know, because of Trimble and others coming back. That's fine. Hey, as a Virginia guy, I don't miss everything about Maryland, but I miss the proximity, game, but I think it went fine. I think Maryland found a very good place in the Big Ten for them, and they needed the money. God knows it.
I really think what it comes down to, it, the only big negative from this is the one that we like to bug Lee Del Vecchio about, is the American Conference is still this.
It's a mess.
Incredible mess. Teams everywhere in the country. I mean, you've got this Connecticut, Cincinnati that were a core piece of the old Big East that nobody wanted them. I mean, if we could find a way to stick those two teams into another one of these other conferences and let the rest of the American be kind of like the old Conference USA, or let it go join up with what's left of Conference USA and make some 30-team monstrosity, I'd be fine.
That's
with
not
that.
A bad idea. I think that the Sun Belt, Conference USA, and the American should kind of I mean, as much as I don't like realignment, the American is not a conference; it's a cluster. Same with Conference USA, and almost into a degree, the Sun Belt. I think if those three leagues sat down and realigned the leagues into three or even four newer leagues for both football and basketball, where you have traditional and regional, or if not traditional rivals, regional rivals, like put the Texas schools together, put Louisiana Tech in with the Texas schools, UAB's leaving, but put Memphis, Cincinnati, Connecticut, your basketball, just get the like-minded schools and the regional schools together and hammer out four new leagues. I think that I would be in favor of that. Four single-division leagues, I think realignment would help them there. Because, as you said, realignment really did, as everybody else was stocking the cabin at the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, those leagues were kind of just carved up and severed, and this is just the scraps of what's left.
And I really think it's just kind of at this mid-level, because when you look below the American Conference USA Mountain West level, that's kind of that second level, I'm still okay with what you have down at the lower levels. The small conferences, the traditional under-the-radar conferences, while there were tons of changes across them as a result of the fallout here, as some of those teams moved up by league, and I have no problem with the way those conferences have turned out. My biggest conference is that middle tier. I think the Mountain West somehow protected itself. I'm not too upset with what happened with them, but
well,
really,
because they got up the WAC. You know, I mean,
pretty much. Yeah.
You essentially
the WAC. Yes, the WAC certainly got obliterated. Okay. They got so obliterated, I forgot about them.
Well, let's have a moment of silence for New Mexico State, who did get left behind, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
The one thing that the power conferences do, as much as they fight amongst each other and as much as they seem to kind of play this keeping up with the Joneses, they actually, at least in regards to football and basketball, work together really well. The BCS was essentially, I don't want to say it was collusion, but they actually worked together. The mid-level, I guess the FBS non-power conferences, CUSA, Sun Belt, Mountain West, Mid-American, and the American, they don't work together at all. And they really should. I really think they should align, because they are similar, and try and work together to do what's in their own best interests instead of carving each other up. I mean, the fact that Houston and Connecticut are in a conference, and you know, that's just kind of ridiculous.
And Central
Florida. Could get the Texas, UCF. You could get the Texas and Louisiana schools together in one league. What do you have? You have Texas State, Texas San Antonio, Houston, SMU. Right? Yeah, SMU, Houston.
North Texas.
Could form a really compelling league with rivalries that would appeal to the fans, with good basketball and football, and that's not happening. I think if it did, those all schools involved would be better off.
Yeah, because Texas and Texas A&M are not there. It was called the Southwest Conference.
Yeah.
Conference USA has all the leftovers.
Yes.
Or the American, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think Conference USA's current alignment makes more sense than the American's current alignment.
Yeah. But even that doesn't make complete sense. I mean, because if you had Memphis, Western Kentucky, Middle Tennessee, Cincinnati, Connecticut, I mean, you know, because those are schools that are sort of basketball-minded, but they play football too. Those five together, I think, would do more for each other than being apart, which they basically are. I guess that's one. I don't know exactly how I'd line it up, but my idea is for those three to get together and form four.
I think we need to put you in charge of this, David.
Yes, I should be in charge. We'll call it the Griggs football and basketball affiliated thing. I don't know.
But you realize we're only talking about the mid-tier leagues. You can't walk into the Big 12 and the SEC and put Missouri and Kansas together.
You can. You can.
We do have some good news, but because of the Big Ten and the Big East, there is one rivalry that's going to be renewed this coming year.
Oh, yes. Someone talk about that.
Let's go for it, John.
Yep. This is going to be the Dave Gavitt tip-off series, I believe, starting in 2015. Georgetown and Maryland is going to be the centerpiece of this eight-game series starting in 2015-16.
Yes. And it's better news than that. It's not official, but both schools have said the series will resume.
Yes.
After 23 years of pettiness, it's not just one game, it's back.
Well, it's because they got the game back. There was always a disagreement on who owed who what game and all that. Well, because they can accept it as, well, it's the Dave Gavitt, it's the Big Ten, you know, Big East challenge, so that didn't really count. But now the slate's clean on one side, and the other side didn't have to give in. Now, go for it. And the fact that a lot of the people that created the resentment aren't in charge anymore, your John Thompsons, and to a lesser Gary Williams.
Yeah, so that's a big rivalry that is coming back, and as we mentioned, there's one rivalry that is not coming back next season, or any season in the near future.
It's coming back. It's coming back! It's coming back! It's not coming back. It might be 20 years before that one comes back. Getting back to what you said about realignment, I, believe it or not, agree with a lot of it. One of the things I don't like is that we went from single division, double round robin conferences in basketball, and even in football, you played a round robin in football, like you played everybody in your conference every year, and it seemed like we got really bloated up into what you would call in soccer a confederation. These aren't even conferences anymore, and I think it took away a lot of the tradition. And Kansas and Missouri is by far the most egregious. I mean, it was the highlight of the sports calendar every year, second to maybe the Super Bowl. But it was huge. That's gone. Like, where's West Virginia Pitt? Where's Texas, Texas A&M? Where's Georgetown and Syracuse? I know it's coming back, but it's not the same. It's not the same when it's not a conference game. And even if Kansas and Missouri did play again, it's not the same. And one of the things that I think realignment did was that it carved up so many great and compelling leagues and games. Most notably, probably, the old Big East, which is sort of still together in the ACC with Louisville, Notre Dame. But also Conference USA, like the Big 12 lost a lot. I think that although you're right, it did still feel like the ACC. It didn't feel like the ACC used to feel. I mean, And it's not in its classic 9-team format. The ACC was never better. Would you agree with that, Joby?
From a basketball standpoint, I would agree. I think there were some underlying weaknesses on the football side, though. It was Florida State and eight-level fusions.
Well, underlying maybe the best in the eight teams that weren't Florida State, but other than that,
well, and what they probably could have done, I think the ideal thing for the ACC. Had they been able to do it, but it was impossible politically to do so, and financially. Financially, you had to have 12. You had to have that championship game. Barring that championship game money aside and the Virginia politics, the state of Virginia politics with Virginia Tech, the ideal thing would have been to add Miami. That's it. Mm-hmm. Keep it and then go with 10. Have Florida State have a partner, and then you have a pretty strong football conference, you know, as we all know from the early 2000s.
Miami move was when they added Vatek and Boston College. That was the our first ever round of major realignment.
I guess it kind of, and I'm too young to remember this, but the Southwest was the first big conference with. I mean, I guess I'm too young. I was too young at the time, but I mean, Lee Delvecchio's talked about this, how bitter the Southwest Conference was. And it wasn't just football. I mean, basketball was rough. When Arkansas went to Texas, I mean, it was just craziness. And it was game.
Houston was huge.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, we all remember Phi Slamma Jamma, but that Houston program under Guy Lewis was strong in the 70s, too, and making Final Fours. Elvin Hayes, etc. Yeah. I mean, we're talking strong program.
So the Southwest was just, I mean, it was a really good conference in both football and basketball, and it had bitter rivalries. And I guess when the SEC went out to 12, was that when it first fell apart?
It started with Arkansas when
Arkansas won the SEC.
Was created. They took four of them, and that was the end of it.
Yeah.
Living in Southwest Conference territory when all this went down. And the Southwest Conference's biggest problem, besides being the state of Texas centric, its biggest problem was that all the teams turned each other in for cheating.
SMU,
for the longest time, would look the other way when they're cheating as bad as we are. The SEC, for the most part, and that's where there's some of this Tennessee-Alabama tension popped up under Fulmer. The SEC would kind of, let them cheat, you know, in football. Whereas Southwest Conference, Texas turns in A&M, and A&M turns in SMU, and SMU turns in TCU. Yeah. And
one of the funny things I didn't realize is that when the Southwest Conference folded, I guess Texas politics, you mentioned Virginia politics, somehow, I don't know all the specifics, but somehow they went with Baylor instead of Houston, even though, like, all accounts were pointing that Houston was going to be the Big 12 team. They made more sense.
Ann Richards was governor.
Yeah, Ann Richards. Okay, if you want to give a little background.
Bob Bullock was lieutenant governor, and he was Texas Tech.
Okay. It is 20 years later, and Houston is still annoyed by this. So, to give you an idea of just how bitter that league was, it was fantastic.
Well, if it had broken up 3 or 4 years earlier, Bill Clements, as we all know from your 30 for 30 special, was an SMU grad. And so SMU probably would have gotten the invite, not Baylor.
If SMU hadn't got the death penalty, they would have definitely gotten the invite. But I think that
Let's say it was pre-death penalty was my point. Because they had a decent basketball program, a strong football program, paid for with the best money, Dallas oil money could buy.
Discussed the modern-day Big 12 because I think there was word recently that they were going to hold off on hosting a championship game for football for the time being because there's still been talk about SMU, Houston, and I think to a lesser extent Cincinnati as possible entrance to the Big 12.
Well, the big thing there on the football side is that the Big 12 is more actively trying to get the football rules changed to allow them to have a championship game with only 10 members. So that they don't have to add SMU.
Yeah, This is not a fix all approach, but it's a fix a lot approach. Can we just swap Missouri and West Virginia? Like, let's send West Virginia to the SEC and let's send Missouri back to the Big 12. We get some of our rivalries back. West Virginia isn't flying.
When you take care of conference, you say the American take care of that too, David.
Yes. But this is what realignment has taken away from us. Backstabbing rivalries that reach a backstabbing level at the rivalries that reach a backstabbing nature at the administrative level to where they're turning each other in. We need that back. We really need that back. I mean, that was so much fun.
We just don't have enough teams at probation. That must be that's further proof that we don't have good rivalries, right? But I guess on that note, let me go around here, and I think we've kind of covered most of this realignment issue, but just ask each of you if there's any other topics we want to hit on, any other news you want to bring up here as we get moved through the off season. John, let me start with you.
Well, I also wanted to go back to some of the other GABA games that were going to be part of a non-conference schedule. They've also set up Michigan and Xavier, Iowa and Marquette,
That's a good one.
Providence and Illinois, some other notable games. And another series I saw today that's going to be scheduled for Pearl Harbor Day at a naval base in Hawaii. Oklahoma and Villanova are going to play, and Navy and Oregon are also going to play as part of a doubleheader on December 7.
That's a Pearl Harbor Day celebration, yes. It's a new event.
That's cool. I was unaware of that event. So.
Joby, how about you?
Well, and we'll talk about this at later updates as a teaser. I've noted I had a lot of fun looking at one particular organization who's big in college basketball. They have changed their preseason number one 3 times in a matter of 3 weeks. And it'll be a lot of fun talking about the season already and the changes, what players have left teams, and then what players are coming aboard teams.
David?
They're one of the things that we like to follow at this time of the year. Now, we don't write much about it because, again, it is sort of under the radar, kind of a confidential thing, and that's just the scheduling process. And once again, it is highly annoying to see your North Dakota State, South Dakota State, like Belmont, teams that are looking to be really competitive this year, looking for strong games. We saw it with Louisiana Tech last year and getting no responses. And then to see your power conference teams, we need bye games, like bye games, looking for multiple bye games. And then you see your Minnows not even trying to be competitive. We want money. We want money. I posted some of the ads the other week on the thread. When 70, okay, for a sport that really needs to grow, it's probably doing the opposite of growing, despite the fact that it was the most popular NCAA tournament in 22 years, the regular season is hurting. When over 70% of all out-of-conference games, and I think that that's a very conservative estimate, are bye games, that's not good. It's not good for your team. I realize cupcakes taste better than vegetables, but it's not good for the fans, and it's not good for the players. Stop scheduling bye games.
Good point here. And speaking of what's almost has become a bye game tournament here, that's one thing I wanted to hit on here. The preseason NIT used to be the preeminent early season college basketball tournament, 16 teams. 2 years ago, they were filling it out with NAIA and D3 schools. Last year, they couldn't even get 16 teams from any source to compete in the tournament. And it's gotten even worse this year. Madison Square Garden is not available. They've lost their site for their Final Four.
And this is the first time since 1984 that it has not been at Madison Square Garden. Is that right?
I'm starting to wonder if maybe after another year or two, this tournament may not even exist at all. I mean, this is a preseason tournament that has gone from one of the top tournaments to almost non-existence. It may be one of these events where you get a couple home games against lousy teams, and they put 4 teams at some neutral site that's probably going to be could be in another city entirely at this point. We don't know how available the Barclays Center is going to be, especially now that Islanders hockey is going to be involved there beginning next season as well. So, that's kind of the death of the preseason NIT, and I think we've been seeing it for a few years now, and it may hit its end point really soon.
Well, you see tournaments popping up in places like, Atlantis and Hawaii and Las Vegas that are becoming more popular than the preseason NIT.
Way more.
I'm surprised it hasn't happened sooner.
I guess, and on that note, one final thing here. David, we're only 190 days away from our first game of the season.
Yes, and you can follow us on Twitter. We're tweeting at least one college basketball tweet every day, hashtag College Hoops Countdown. Be sure and follow us.
Yes, and we're going to be doing more of these podcasts as the offseason goes on, focusing on issues such as coaching changes, preseason previews, recruiting news, and anything else that comes up.
Yeah.
All right, so on that note, have a great night, everybody. For John, Joby, David, I'm Chad. Take care.